minds that plot destruction. Sorcerer of death's construction. In the fields of bodies burning, as the war machine keeps turning. Death and hatred to mankind, poisoning their brainwashed minds.
Welcome to the Anarchist World This Week, broadcast across Australia on the National Community Radio Satellite. Listen. The Anarchist World This Week, Australia's sacred cow slaughterhouse. Listen to analysis of local, national, international events. Listen to analysis you'll never hear anywhere else. Welcome to the Anarchist World This Week, broadcast across Australia, courtesy of the Community Radio Network. My name is Joseph Toscano. This program is coming to you from the studios of 3CR in Melbourne. The program is podcast. You can access the podcast by going to 3cr.org.au. My apologies for the last 2 weeks. Pre-records, they can be particularly boring. Sometimes they're particularly interesting. But we're back live on air on Community Radio 3CR via the Community Radio Network, and I'd like to thank all those radio stations across the country which continue to broadcast the Anarchist World This Week, courtesy of the Community Radio Network. Obviously, you can log in to the Anarchist World This Week on the 3CR podcast and many other platforms around the world. Cynicism. Well, before I go into talk about cynicism, I'd just like to remind you, anarchos means without rulers. It doesn't mean without government, as many people in the dictionary will think. It's about without rulers. It's about creating a society where power is devolved, possibly through direct democratic means, and wealth is held in common. Because it's inequalities in power and wealth which create most of the problems we have today on planet Earth. So it's a simple definition. So if you're involved in a struggle to share power, hold wealth in common and share wealth, well, whether you like it or not, you've got the mark of Cain on your forehead. You're an anarchist. All right, cynicism, the aphrodisiac of the ruling classes. Now, this is the first program for 2026. And I've been broadcasting now, this is my 49th year, broadcasting the Anarchist World This Week in its various guises. Initially as Encounters with the Third Alternative, and when the communist or the Marxist-Leninist empire crumbled in 1989, we changed the name to the Anarchist World This Week, because there weren't three alternatives, there were only two alternatives left. So, cynicism, the aphrodisiac of the ruling classes. Now, people don't need guns to keep you down on the farm. And people don't need to use fear. The fear of you losing your property, the fear of you losing your job, the fear of you losing your income, to keep you down on the farm, as they say. What we see as the most potent weapon in 21st century Western parliamentary democracies, parliamentary representative democracies, is cynicism. The growing wave of cynicism, which has gripped us as individuals and as a people. We've come to the conclusion that change is impossible, that hope, the love child of desire and expectation, is unrealistic, that all we can do is shut our eyes, put some stoppers in our ears and keep our mouth shut, keep our nose to the grindstone. If you're a Social Security beneficiary, get your little pension. And if you're a wage slave, get your little wage at the end of the day, because we are told consistently it is a waste of time to agitate for change. A total waste of time. That breeds cynicism, and that cynicism breeds a culture of doing nothing. A culture that says change is impossible, you're wasting your time, forget about it. Let's all go to the cricket, or the football, or to the mosque, or church, or the temple. Let's look at other things. The status quo is set in concrete and you can't change it. What a load of garbage. What a load of garbage. Although cynicism may be, is, not maybe, is the aphrodisiac of the ruling classes, hope, the desire for change and the expectation that change will occur is our aphrodisiac. Not hope based on the concept of waiting for people to work up the right channels to throw us a few more crumbs off the corporate table, but hope which is based on the ability of people to come together and work collectively to destroy a system which creates so much harm, not just in this country, but around the planet, which for generations and hundreds, if not thousands of years, has resulted in the deaths of hundreds of millions of people who have had the audacity to hope that their situation will improve. Now, let's move on. Venezuela. The buffoons at it again. Unbelievable. Well, it's not unbelievable. It's what you expect from a buffoon. The buffoon in Washington, Buffalini, for all the hand actions of Mussolini, our good old Buffalini, the buffoon in Washington, thinks that by extracting, in inverted commas, kidnapping, let's be realistic, kidnapping, the leader of Venezuela, that somehow he's going to solve the drug problem in the US of A. Now, drugs are big business. I mean, if the buffoon in Washington knew how to spell the word hypocrisy, what he should be looking at is not the role some transit country plays in the distribution of illegal drugs, not legal drugs, but be looking at the damage, the hundreds of thousands of people that have died in the United States, not because over the last two decades, not because of cocaine being transported to the US of A, but because of the fact that Big Pharma in the USA had open slather as far as manufacturing and selling narcotics to Americans and creating the biggest addiction death toll that has occurred in the history of the USA. But obviously, as you and I know, and as the buffoon in Washington keeps telling us, although his more respectable, you know, friends keep distancing themselves about 2 inches, will tell us that it's all about oil. So the USA has got this philosophy, and it's a very simple philosophy. It believes that the next big world war, mark my words, world war, which we will not be immune from, will centre around who has the best access to energy resources around the globe. Now, the USA has never been interested in collective defence. It loves to act unilaterally. If you think what happened in Venezuela is something new, think again. Look at Chile in 1971 when Allende was murdered. At least Maduro ended up in, and his wife, Cecilia, ended up in a New York court. Look at what happened in Nicaragua for decades. Honduras, Guatemala, the military dictatorships which were imposed on Brazil by the United States government. The United States has always believed that South America is part of the USA. But unfortunately for the buffoon, what he's forgotten is that if you want to rule and occupy a country, you need to pay a price in human lives. Now, the so-called, well, I won't use the word extraction, the kidnapping of the president of Venezuela and his wife Cecilia Flores resulted in the deaths of over 80 Venezuelans. Now, obviously, the man is crowing that no Americans were killed. But if he thinks extracting the leadership for Venezuela is somehow going to give him access, or his mates in the corporate sector, access to all that beautiful oil which is needed for America's defence, well, he needs to think again. Not all of Venezuela is controlled by the Venezuelan government. Especially the Colombian-Venezuelan border, there are large numbers of guerrillas and guerrilla forces. And if he wants to impose his will on Venezuela, he needs to put boots on the ground. So my financial advice to the listeners is to find a company that makes body bags and invest in them, because the way the buffoon is going, this is the only lesson that will occur. For example, he's forgotten about Vietnam, forgotten about the Korean struggle, forgotten about Afghanistan, forgotten about Iraq. So the buffoon is a buffoon is a buffoon is a buffoon. He may have a lot of weapons and a lot of people, but ultimately he's a buffoon. And what I found really fascinating, here we have the president in waiting, a Nobel Prize recipient, and he can't bring himself to supporting her return because he believes he should have got that Nobel Prize for Peace and she stole it from him. Unbelievable. Let's see what happens. Maybe China will take over Taiwan and say, well, we're just following the example of our friends in the United States of America. It's not extraordinary. What's extraordinary is they weren't killed. That's the way the old US imperialists used to do it. They go in, blow up the place, kill the leadership and, you know, put their acolytes in charge. Remember good old Papa Doc in Haiti, supported the USA for over 40 years, one of the most evil, destructive dictators. When finally the people of Haiti rebelled, when he died, they pulled his body out from his grave and ripped it limb from limb. Remember the death squads in Guatemala, Honduras, Bolivia, you name it, the Bay of Pigs invasion. Yeah. All right, so let's move on. And the other thing is, I won't move on because the Greenland saga. Now, obviously, the lad knows and his boys and girls know that, you know, what they did in Venezuela is not very nice. Breaks international law. So what do you do? you avert the Europeans' gaze from the atrocities that occurred in Venezuela. Yep, and you talk about Greenland. Now, Greenland, a lot of minerals, they would like to have Greenland. But I'd just like to remind listeners that the United States of America has two bases in northern Greenland, which they've had since World War II. So any talk about Greenland is not about security. It's about bolstering the United States' ability to continue to attempt to dominate world affairs. Imperialism is imperialism. Now, if the buffoon was really interested in getting hold of a few terrorists and war criminals, maybe they should have organised an extraction of the war criminal, the Prime Minister of Israel, Mr. Netanyahu, who has an arrest warrant issued against him for war crimes in Gaza. Well, then maybe people would show a bit of respect for the buffoon in Washington. Well, obviously, this is not going to happen because he's not interested in little old Israel. What he's interested in is his and his mates' financial empires. Let's move on. Now, I did something stupid over the last 2 weeks. Well, over the last few days. I couldn't be bothered at the beginning, but I was getting a bit bereft in terms of entertainment, you know? Entertainment. Once the festivities are over, you're on your own. So I thought to myself, cricket. That's the sport I need to look at. Everybody's talking about the cricket. Now, I've never watched a cricket game live. I couldn't be bothered. But occasionally when I was younger, I used to watch a bit of cricket on television. This is before I turned 15, before I realised there was more to life than watching cricket. And I thought, maybe I will turn on free-to-air television, as I'm not going to pay any bastard, you know, for the shit they pump out on television, and watch a bit of cricket. Maybe I'll get excited, or maybe I can just lapse into a coma. And then I thought, all right, Jay, you need to do it. You need to do it for the listener's sake. So I turned on the cricket. I was shocked. Now, these are national teams. We had, is it England or the United Kingdom? I don't know what they call themselves. And Australia. National teams. Now, I understand everybody needs to make a buck. And every time you turn on the television screen, it's about the advertising surrounding the cricket. But I could not believe that the front, that's right, the front, the chest wall and the abdomen, in some cases, was covered by private enterprise. We had some bank, sorry for the tautology, bankrolling the Australian team, and a motor company from overseas, the English are from overseas, bankroll in the English team. And I'm thinking to myself, what? These are national teams. They've sold their soul. So I thought, can't bear to watch this. I'll turn on the ABC. I'll go on to local radio and listen to the cricket. Another mistake, boys and girls, another mistake. The chatter amongst the presenters was so inane. They were so full of themselves that you couldn't even get the bloody cricket score half the time. So after a few minutes, I turned that off, and then I lapsed into a slumber, thinking that I'd just survived a nightmare. So, if you're into professional sport, don't forget how it's bankrolled. Look, I don't care if local teams need to make a buck, but when you have a national team which represents this country, apparel festooned by private enterprise to such a degree that you can't even see the player, you realise how far they will go in order to destroy a sport and make a buck. And as they say, it's not cricket. Now, obviously, there are more important things than this to talk about, but I just thought I'd bring it. Now, another thing you may find during a holiday break or an end-of-year break is the tin rattlers. And every time we get some type of, reactionary conservative wave sweeping the country, people talk about charity beginning at home. Charity beginning at home. And I'm thinking to myself, there are 27 million of us living on a continent. That's 27 million. We make up 0.3% of the world's population. 0.3% of the world's population. We live on a resource-rich continent. We live on a continent where there is so much agricultural bounty that exporting excess agricultural production to the rest of the world is part and parcel of everyday life in this country. All right? We have 32,000 registered charities in Australia. And obviously, if you donate to these registered charities, you can claim a legal, legitimate tax deduction. Okay? All makes sense. So we live in a potentially rich country. Potentially rich. Where everybody, every human being on planet Australia, should be able to enjoy their life free of the fear of not having a shelter, access to shelter, access to food, and to personal security. There is no reason in the bloody world that we, of all the sovereign nation states on planet Earth, can't resolve this issue. So, why do we find that one-third of Australians rely on social security benefits to survive, which just keeps body and soul together? Why do we find another 60% of Australians working in some cases two jobs or two people from the same home or the same relationship, working their butts off to keep a roof over their heads, educate their children if they have children, and possibly have a little holiday at the end of the year? Why? Why do the 1% that own the means of production, distribution, exchange and communication own more than 50% of the resources in this country? Why do we have charities competing in the public arena for your attention with overseas charities which are trying to raise money for people in extreme circumstances? Now, I have, and my late wife, we supported you know, Children for a World Vision for over 40 years, and I continue to support Children for a World Vision. You know, I contribute to Medicine Sans Frontiers and other overseas-based organisations. But why do we now have this battle between Australian charities? Why do we need, and again, I'm not questioning the goodwill of the people involved in these charities. Obviously, their heart is in the right place. They are filling a vacuum which has been created by our inability as a society to fulfill the basic human needs of significant sections of Australian society. Why do we need charities to raise money to send Australian kids to public schools? Why do we need charities to raise money for medical research? Why do we need charities to raise money to try to keep people sheltered? Why do we need charities to raise money to protect people or help people who find themselves in domestically violent situations? We are an incredibly rich country. And I'll tell you why. Because we have a people, and we've got to blame ourselves, and governments, which put the interests of the few before the interests of the many. Every day we see this. We see the interests of the corporate sector that 1% and the 1% that own the means of production, distribution, exchange and communication, and the 8% of Australians who are part of the investment class, who enrich themselves by using legitimate legal taxation minimisation processes. Why do we allow corporations to exploit this country's mineral resources, pay a peppercorn rent in terms of royalties and in less in terms of compensation to First Nations people, and see most of this money drift off overseas? That's why we find ourselves in this situation. And that's why the United States of America has decided to take over Venezuela's oil resources, because in the 1980s, Chavez, and the political movement they were part of did the unforgivable. They nationalised Venezuela's oil resources to benefit the people of Venezuela. Obviously, the trade embargoes that have been placed on Venezuela are just as important in terms of creating instability in that country than the actual policies of that government. So this is the $20 million question. Well, was it the $4 million? I forgot what it was. $64 million question. Does a country like Australia have the right to benefit from the exploitation of this country's resources? And if it doesn't, what's the point of having a sovereign nation state when you've got no control over your everyday affairs? And this is what Venezuela is all about. It's about control. Who controls resources? It's nothing about, you know, narco-terrorism. It's about control and resources. And that's why, as an anarchist, we always talk about the root causes of the social dislocation and distress and death and destruction that is part and parcel of everyday life in many parts of the globe. And that's inequalities in power and wealth. And every time people try to take control, we have elements in society which will use every means at their disposal, even if it means killing 18 Venezuelans, to meet their ends. Extraordinary, isn't it? Think about it. Think about it, because that's the ultimate, isn't it? That is the ultimate. Why do we find ourselves in this situation? Why do we keep continuing to target the forelock of the USA? Well, imperialism is imperialism. Whether it occurs in the 1960s, whether it occurred in the 15th century, imperialism is imperialism. An occupation is an occupation, as we see in Gaza. Now, some people mistakenly believe the situation in Gaza and the West Bank has stabilised. Well, it hasn't stabilised. Nothing has really changed apart from the body count. The Israeli authorities have total control, not only who goes into Gaza and who goes out of Gaza, but what goes into Gaza and what goes out of Gaza. Not that much goes out of Gaza. Although the state of Israel, a pariah state, a criminal state, would love to see all the people, the Palestinians living in Gaza, move on to Lebanon or Egypt or another part of the Middle East or even the United States of America, where I'm sure the buffoon would welcome them. So nothing has really changed. We still have mass displacement. We still have people being killed on a daily basis by the Israeli authorities. We still have total control at the top of the resources which are entering that part of the world. Obviously, people are surviving hand-to-mouth existence and temporary shelter, but that's about it. Nothing has really changed. 70,000 civilians, well, 70,000 Palestinians are now dead. I think over 2,000 Israelis are now dead. We see increasing friction in the West Bank as the Israeli state expands its illegal occupation. And we see no resolution. Because nobody in the Western world and Australia is willing to say boo to the Israeli authorities. If the Chinese were guilty of the same atrocities, I'm sure the world would be up in arms. But it seems, as far as the Western parliamentary democracy is concerned, hypocrisy is the name of the game. Now, obviously, you think, well, Joe, maybe cynicism is the best response. Maybe we should be cynical and we should stand back and we should just wait to be spoon-fed, you know, or should we fight amongst each other as we fight for the crumbs which are brushed off the corporate table? Nothing could be further than the truth. Nothing could be further than the truth, because nothing changes without struggle. Now, obviously, struggle comes in many, many forms. But ultimately, change comes when a significant number of people are willing and able to participate in activities which promote the idea that change is not only desirable, but possible. Now, if somebody at some stage hadn't stood up against slavery centuries ago, we wouldn't have societies where slavery is considered to be beyond the pale. Now, obviously, there is still slavery, but not at the you know, it's the fringes, the margins of society. Although you could call a lot of what's happening in the Middle East economic slavery, where people are brought across to work on projects for a minimal return, no real compensation, off their bundle off to another world, back to where they come from. But that's a different story. But what I'm trying to say is change is possible. It's possible through struggle. Even parliamentary democracy wasn't handed to people. They fought tooth and nail over centuries to create a parliamentary system which theoretically represents their interests. But unfortunately, when you have a parliamentary system where people with assets can actually determine the direction of a result, then you have real issues. And that's what we see in Australia today. All right, let's move on. Now, a lot of people say to me, well, the ALP's got this huge majority in federal parliament and a friendly Senate, but it's doing nothing about it. And I say, well, what do you want them to do? Because, see, you see, the ALP, the Australian Labor Party, the party that took the U out of Labor, L-A-B-O-R, long ago, since the Whitlam-led Labor government 50 years ago, ditched the idea of income redistribution, ditched the idea of nationalising this country's resources and using these resources for the good of the people in this country. Ditched the ideas that somehow we're an independent, sovereign nation state. Ultimately, we are little more than an appendage to the United States war machine. And nothing highlights this more than the lack of response by the Australian government to what's happening in Gaza and the West Bank, and what's happening and what just happened in Venezuela and what will happen in Greenland. You know, we think that instead of trying to organise support for ourselves in our region, that somehow the United States will send out some tugboats and tug the Australian continent to the west coast of the US of A. Well, it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. And while we pursue a foreign policy which is totally dependent on the United States military-industrial complex, we will pay that price. Because ultimately, the United States is not interested in Australia. It's interested in Venezuela's oil reserves. It's interested in Greenland's mineral reserves. And why is it interested? In order to shore up its own position in a growingly competitive world between them and the Chinese Communist Party. So, I'm not suggesting we support the Chinese Communist Party. I'm not suggesting we support the United States imperial ventures. I'm not suggesting we support Putin's Russia, the oligarchs there. What I'm suggesting is that we, as a people, demand that the governments that we elect pursue an unaligned, independent, foreign policy. Because if we don't, and we continue to be an appendage of the US of A, if there is World War III, we will be sacrificed on the United States altar, because they have no interest in anybody. That's what the behaviour in Europe represents. No interest in anybody apart from their self-interest. And they make that abundantly clear. Put America first. and they're doing what they need to do to put America first. So why should we blame them? They're doing what they promised they would do. What we should be saying is put Australia first. Put the interests of the people in this country first. And if it means breaking down the monopolies which these corporations, which control agriculture and the resources of this country, are challenged in order to put this country's people first, then we need to create that challenge now. Not tomorrow, but now. You listen to the Anarchist World This Week, broadcast across Australia via the Community Radio Network. This program is streaming live on 3cr.org.au. That's right. It's a podcast. Now, a lot of people say, well, that was pleasant rhetoric, wasn't it, Joe? You're preaching to the converted. You're preaching on the hill. Nobody's listening. Well, sometimes some people are listening. Now, a little bit more parochial news. Now, there will be a state election in the state of Victoria at the end of 2026. I think it's the 28th. Could be the 26th of November 2026. Because election dates are fixed in the state of Victoria, right? Now, the Liberal Party, which had been trailing badly in the polls for decades, has finally got its act together, in inverted commas. Or has it, I hear you ask. And they have elected a first-term leader, the member for Q. Very nice, leafy, inner-city suburb, covering parts of Kew, Baldwin, North Baldwin, I've forgotten the rest. Very pleasant little suburb. And everybody thinks that Jess Wilson, I think that's her name, Jess Wilson, photogenic, young, mother, wife, I don't know what her occupation was before she became a politician. Obviously a lawyer or a financial consultant. Who knows? I don't know. Right. The new face of the Victorian Liberal Party. Everybody said, isn't this wonderful? Isn't this wonderful? We finally have a woman leading the Victorian Liberal Party. And then I thought to myself, well, okay. Give him a break. Let's see what happens. And then what we saw is a few days ago, Mr. Gross, a former tennis player, the member for Nepean, who's been under constant attack by the Murdoch press for his relationships, which they sued, him and his wife sued, you know, saying, I'm not going to recontest the next election. I've been undermined by my own mates in the Liberal Party. And then Jess Wilson pops up, as you do when you're the leader of the opposition and you're photogenic, pops up and says, guess what? There are no divisions in the Victorian Liberal Party. I fell over backwards. Well, figuratively, if I fell over backwards today, I'd never be able to get up at my age. And figuratively, and I thought, has the case that members of the Victorian Liberal, parliamentary members of the Liberal Party and their supporters have taken against the party itself for giving a loan to Mr. Pesutto, the former leader who was found guilty of defaming a member, I've forgotten her name. You know, this is a party that's totally divided regarding policy. This is the party that after 4 or 5 years of consultation is going to rip up the treaty, right, which has been signed and enacted by First Nations people in the state of Victoria, the first type of its treaty. This is the type of party that looks backwards to the good old Kennett era days. They talk about the bulging state debt. The fact that they're going to, you know, halt the debt. And how are they going to halt the debt? Well, they're going to decrease taxation for the corporate sector. They're going to decrease taxation, you know, for their little mates. But they're going to wipe out many publicly funded institutions in this country, just as Mr. Kennett and his crew did when they succeeded, was it the 1990s? I remember those days clearly, and the impact it had on public schools, public health, public infrastructure, and the list goes on and on. But the trouble, you see, Jess Wilson is very photogenic, and we see that a lot of our media mates don't ask the hard questions. They're not willing to ask the hard questions. But I think I may throw my hat into the Q Dreaming ring. Not because I would win. Obviously, I'd come dead last. I think it's important that during parliamentary elections, whether it's the state or federal level, you do have candidates who are willing to put forward a more radical view, like nationalising this country's resources. Because if you don't put those views during a parliamentary election period, you'll find that they just disappear out of the public discourse. Just disappear. So I'm exceptionally interested in the state election. Not in terms of standing as a candidate in order to win office, because that will never occur. But in terms of influencing debate and highlighting that the member for Q is not in such a safe seat. Because I looked at the last state election for Q, and after preferences, she won 52% of the vote. Because there was a Teal candidate, there was a Greens candidate, and there was an ALP candidate. And obviously they, you know, shared their preferences. So it's quite possible the leader of the Victorian Liberal Party can be bumped off during the parliamentary election, because the gap between her and the main competitors in that race is not as wide as people think. But the dilemma is, it's not just about economics. You've got to understand that these are the most socially conservative people have now taken over the Liberal Party, not just at a state level, but a federal level. And that's why the leader of the opposition, Susan Ley, is having so much difficulty in elucidating or coming up with policies which are attractive to people. Because you see, what's happened is, even Bob Menzies, who was instrumental in creating the Broadchurch Liberal Party, wouldn't join the Liberal Party today. And I have undertakings that he actually resigned from the Liberal Party before he died because of the change of direction. The Liberal Party represents religious fundamentalism and all the conservative elements which come with religious fundamentalism. And it represents the most reactionary, conservative economic viewpoints in this country, where we will see, as we see in the United States of America and the buffoon, where the 1% and the 8% who are part of the investment class are those who do exceptionally well through the implementation of their policies. So if you live in the electorate of Kew in Victoria, I'm interested in, and you're interested in running such a campaign, and I'm interested, I think I'll be starting the campaign in maybe April Fool's Day. Sounds good, doesn't it? Or March, who knows? Because you need to, you know, start a long way out when you begin these types of campaigns. So if you're interested, give me a call, 0439 395 489. I'm looking for assistance, as they say, in terms of people nominating me and in terms of people assisting with the campaign. You will not be supporting a candidate who's going to win the election, but you may be supporting a candidate who will take away a few votes and possibly create the downfall of the Liberal member for Q. All right, let's move on. This is the Anarchist World This Week, broadcast across Australia by the Community Radio Network. Now, it's going to be an interesting year, not just in terms of domestic politics, but in terms of international politics, because it doesn't take much for an area of the world to be plunged into disaster. Climate change, or the climate emergency, is the forefront of that struggle that we face, especially when the United States of America thinks it's a hoax. Then we have the issue of national sovereignty, so-called international law, where the bigger you batten, the more you can acquire. But the trouble is that it is 2026. It's the second quarter of the 21st century. And we seem to be fighting the same battles we have now fought for hundreds of years. Battles against inequalities in power and wealth. The deregulation, privatisation, globalisation, corporatisation, revolution has been a total failure. And exporting it to Venezuela, as we saw in Iraq, doesn't help anybody. It's time that we fought back. Now, obviously, you do what you can with what you have. Don't expect huge successes, but ensure that the flame for change is not extinguished. And that's the key to any struggle. That you continue to be involved irrespective of the hurdles that you face. Because if you're not involved, nothing will change. So I encourage you, as your New Year's resolution for 2026, to become involved in activity to promote change, to promote the devolution of power and the sharing of wealth. Obviously, it's a difficult task. It was easy, it would have happened years ago. It's getting more and more difficult as the state continues to enact legislation to limit the ability of people to withdraw their labour to promote their interests, withdraw the ability of people to protest to promote their interests. It's becoming more and more difficult. But the fact, as I said at the beginning, is cynicism is the aphrodisiac of the ruling classes, and hope, the desire for change and the expectation that change will occur is our aphrodisiac. So in 2026, I encourage you to be positive, to look forward and to become involved. The more activities you become involved in, the more chances that change will occur. The more you sit back and just tut-tut, the chances of change become impossible. Thank you once again for listening to The Anarchist World on your local community radio station, courtesy of the Community Radio Network. This program has been streaming live on 3cr.org.au. That's 3cr.org.au. The program is podcast. You can access the podcast by going to 3cr.org.au. Listen in to The Anarchist World this week on your local community radio station, courtesy of the Community Radio Network, next week.
Evil minds that plot destruction, sorcerer of death's construction.
An analysis you'll never hear anywhere else. Anarchist World this week, Australia's sacred cow slaughterhouse. 10 a.m. every Wednesday. Listen to The Anarchist World this week for an up-to-date analysis of local, national and international events.
Poisoning their brainwashed minds. Oh, Lord, yeah.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast. If you found it valuable, please consider donating or subscribing to support independent community radio. To find out more, go to 3cr.org.au.